Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy's brought to you by Mazda of Everett. Two things I need to tell you about from the Mac and Jack's text line. First of all, someone texted in letting you know, well, I should let you guys know that I made it a goal to get to 311 reviews on Apple Podcasts for the Jake and Stacy podcast. We're at 294.
This number means
like
nothing.
No,
she set a goal.
Exactly 100 for my goal. So I set the goal.
Okay.
And I am about to reach the goal. And I said, Jake, if I can get to the goal by next Friday, you have to bring in donuts for the office, which Jake has never done because we make bets over donuts all the time for like random sports things. Like, oh, the Mariners can sweep. This person's going to get a shutout, whatever.
And I always win.
And Jake always wins. Always. I'm not kidding when I say all. Like, I mean, he has never had to bring in donuts for the office.
It's been great.
Finally, there's a chance to make Jake Heaps bring in donuts for all of us. And you have a chance to help. And I would like for you to help me so there is not yet another bet because I really, really need this to happen. Someone texted in because I said I'm about 15 away. They said, I'll make 14 fake accounts to get there just to assure Jake Heaps' loss. Go Issaquah Eagles. Yes, I live in the past.
Petty rivalries. I love it.
If Jake has ever beaten your high school football team, leave a review so that he has to reach into his wallet next Friday.
But five stars.
But five stars. Five stars. Secondly, on the text line, someone texted in and they said, hey, Jake, when you can fit it into the show, a breakdown of the quarterback position, like what's the hardest areas and where the most improvements can occur, like Drew Lock, for instance. Well, glad that you asked, because what we're going to talk about is how the Seahawks can turn their quarterback into what Jared Goff was to the Rams. I know the Rams didn't end up winning a Super Bowl, but
they
got there. And there's a version of a team where you can have a quarterback that is not the best quarterback in the league and still succeed. What else needs to work? They've got some of those pieces, right? A former offensive coordinator and run game coordinator with Seattle, both of whom were with LA previously. So you don't want to repeat anyone's formula. You want to do your own formula. But how can you get there without, say, a top five quarterback?
Well, this is something that actually got brought up on Mike Salk's show yesterday morning. And, you know, I thought it was an interesting point, and I wanted to dive deeper into that, because it's one thing to say, well, here's a comparable quarterback in a style of offense, and can they turn Drew Lock into that? And I think that it's important to note the differences there. I think it's important to note why Sean McVay and Shane Waldron, who was a part of that staff, were able to help Jared Goff, perform at a high level and be a high functioning point guard for their offense. And really, when you look at it from the Jared Goff, experience in 2017 to 2020, when he was in LA and Sean McVay is there, I mean, you're looking at somebody who drastically improved their game. It was anywhere from 62 to 64% completion percentage, was always around 3,800 yards to over 4,500 yards, and when you talk about touchdown to interception ratio, I mean, it was very, very strong. We're talking about a 2.2 interception percentage, so that's solid. What I would say is that how do you get Drew Lock or Geno Smith to that point? And honestly, you're looking at Drew Lock being that guy. Mm-hmm. Somebody that Jared Goff, in his first year with the Rams, Jeff Fisher, it did not go well whatsoever. And for Drew Lock, in his experience, it did not go well with a turmoil of constantly changing offensive coordinators and it just not being a healthy offensive ecosystem for Drew Lock to thrive and to improve. And so you're changing that and saying, all right, in a new, friendlier system that Shane Waldron will run here in Seattle, that you could see a jump in Drew Lock's success. And I think that he can to a certain degree. Am I expecting Drew Lock to throw 25 to 30 touchdowns this year? Not necessarily. But I am expecting him to keep his interception ratio down. I'm expecting him to be more of a chain mover rather than a playmaker. You know, when you watch him play, he's got this wild streak in him that I think that the Seahawks really like, this playmaking ability that he has and that he possesses. But there were often times where he relied upon that too much in his time in Denver. because either he wasn't confident in the play design that was going on and he wanted to wait until things broke down to try and make a bigger play, or, you know, it's something that you go to too much because it's comfortable. And I think for Shane Waldron in this offense, they have to make things easy on him from the perspective of being able to have a strong running game, mm-hmm. putting him in positions where he's not having to push the ball down the field all the time, and rather just distributing and saying, look, your job is to move the chains. Your job is not to be the big playmaking weapon that Russell Wilson was for our offense for so many years.
So let's assume then we're moving forward, because did you look at this as like a hypothetical, how can they find a quarterback like Goff and mold this roster around him? Or are we looking at it, I need to decide moving forward, are we looking at it like, let's assume Drew Lock is the starter week one, how do you move forward from here?
Well, how do you move forward is what I would say their biggest job is they have to make the offense simplistic. So the difference in from Russell Wilson, it was like you have the playbook and you're opening the whole thing right from the get-go in year one with Shane Waldron. That didn't necessarily work out as well as you would have hoped it would have been. You know, now you're paring it down. You're really trying to simplify it. And remember, in Jared Goff's experience the first couple years with Sean McVay, I mean, what was the you know,
big
widely known thing.
That Sean McVay was making it easy on Jared Goff, and it was Sean McVay, not Goff.
Exactly, and that he was calling the plays. Guess what? I don't care. Yeah, would you want Jared Goff to take the next step and do that on his own? Absolutely. But if being that guy, if you're functioning at a high level and you're having to do that as the head coach or the play caller and it's working, then keep doing it. Keep doing it. And I think that that's something that Shane Waldron in this offense can do for Drew Lock, is to make it simple, get up to the line of scrimmage quickly to where you're not running a high-tempoed situation, but that you can communicate with your quarterback all the way down to the 15-second mark in the play clock to make sure that you're getting in the best play possible to put your team in the best position for success each and every single down. But I think that what they did early on with Jared Goff and with that Rams group there from 2017 to 2020, or really 2017 to 2019, is the fact that they were able to have a really good running game and use the play action game to their advantage. Naked bootlegs, deep play action passes, play action screen game, everything was centered around the running game, and that's exactly what this is going to have to be here in Seattle with Rashad Penny, with Ken Walker, and if Chris Carson can contribute, they have to have that running game be successful for them. If you want to see that same type of jump or that same type of success translate for somebody like Drew Lock, like it was for Jared Goff.
Now, question for you. I'm going to read you very, very basic stats here. One quarterback, 65.5 completion percentage, 3,400 yards-ish, 35 touchdowns, okay? Next quarterback, 64.8 completion percentage, 4,600 yards, 32 touchdowns. Which is Russell Wilson, which is Jared Goff from 2018?
The last one you just said.
Is who?
Jared Goff.
That's Jared Goff.
Yeah.
So here's my question. I think that we talk about Jared Goff as though it's like he's just like any old Joe thrown in there. Jared Goff's 2018 season, when they actually went to a Super Bowl, mm-hmm. not only did the team go 13-3, 64% completion percentage, which isn't sky high, but isn't awful. He had 4,688 yards, 32 touchdowns, passer rating of over 100, a 101.1 passer rating.
Yeah.
He was still sacked 33 times.
Well, I mean, Jared Goff's also a former number one overall pick. We act like this guy's terrible, and he's
well,
not.
No, but what
he's,
I'm saying is above. When people are looking at Drew Lock mm-hmm. and they're saying, oh, he can be Jared Goff, and it's like, I am not saying that Drew Lock can't. What I'm saying is, what have we seen from Drew Lock to make us think that despite the Seahawks' thoughts on Jared Goff, not Seahawks' mm-hmm. team, Seahawks' fans' thoughts on Jared Goff, that he yeah. can be that good? Because Jared Goff's 2018 was actually pretty solid.
It was, but and this is where I would caution people with the difference here. Jared Goff was talented enough to be the number one overall quarterback in the 2016 draft, right? Even in Detroit, in an awful situation on 3-10 team, Jared Goff had a 67% completion percentage and a 19 touchdown to 8 interception ratio. That's not like out of this world, but that's pretty darn good in terms of being on one of the worst teams in the NFL. Going from one of the best to one of the worst. That's pretty impressive to handle for somebody like Jared Goff. The reason why you would say that Drew Lock could make that transition potentially like Jared Goff did is because it's more about the system and having quarterbacks that can fit your system and operate your system like a point guard rather than needing to have a star-level quarterback to, you know, make this whole thing work.
Now, to be
that
fair,
that is the argument that, you know, I think someone like Mike Salk was presenting yesterday morning,
right?
Or that, you know, if you want to look at this from an optimistic point of view, that you're saying, hey, this could be a path. You could see a jump when Drew Lock this year because the system is a lot more friendlier.
To be fair to Drew Lock, he was in the same draft class as Kyler Murray, who was going to go number one no matter what. Drew Lock, though, a second rounder, so still not necessarily like a high pick, just a different quarterback, different background, not as highly touted. But I think it's just an interesting way to look at. You still have no idea what his ceiling's going to be. Like, I think we've seen Jared Goff's ceiling. Jared Goff's ceiling is 2018. We've seen Jared Goff's ceiling.
No question.
You have no idea what Drew Lock's can be, but it is a good reminder that, like, were he to reach Jared Goff's, and could you still make that a Super Bowl team?
Mm-hmm.
That's still a ways for any young quarterback to get to. But also that you've got to have some of those other pieces around them. Like you said, make the offense simplistic. Rely on that running game and the play action off of it. And also beef up that roster.
Yeah. I mean, the difference that we're looking at right now, there is a clear difference in the roster that Jared Goff had during that stretch than what is currently on the Seattle Seahawks from every scenario, okay? Offensive line and everything, how it paired together and worked together. You know, obviously you got a great receiving core. You've got good solid tight ends. But, you know, there's still a lot of question marks about your running back group and also your offensive line. So how does that all pair together? How does that, you know, mesh together? That's really the big question mark for this offense and this team. But that's going to be a big task for Shane Waldron to be able to guide and help somebody like Drew Lock, make it simple on them and take a lot of the pressure off of them and just let them go play and just make good decisions. Make good decisions. Trust the progressions that we're giving you and go play the game, and the running game and everything else will take care of itself. I think that is the recipe for success.
Coming up in 15 minutes, Scott Servais talked about the story of the game, but I think his quote is actually the story of the season for the Mariners. Before we get to that, though, let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the
first
game.
Down, speaking of bets, you and I have one on when a deal could get done with DK Metcalf. So when do you anticipate the Seahawks will ink that?
Another donut deal that Stacey Ross just can't help
herself.
I
have an addiction. I can't just go out and buy donuts. I need to have a reason to buy donuts. That it's different. The calories don't count when they're like that.
So I am predicting, with just the way the rhetoric is from John Schneider, Pete Carroll, DK Metcalf, there seems to be a lot of synergy that is going on right now. And there is a clear sign of you know, commitment to one another, right? And I think there's no greater evidence than this at cut number 8. Pete Carroll, talking about the draft, this is in their post-draft interview with the media. Pete Carroll can't help himself but talk about DK Metcalf.
It's really important for us. We'll kick it into John's court, you know, here in the weeks to come here after the draft and all.
But we'll get to the draft.
Yeah. but we're really communicating great. And DK, we've been on a great wavelength to move forward, and hopefully this will all work out. And we don't plan on him going anywhere else. We want him to be with us.
So with that kind of conversation and it happening as soon as the draft is over, that is where I anticipate that the Seattle Seahawks are going to get a deal done for DK Metcalf before they break for their offseason, before training camp in early June. So I think that this is going to happen somewhere around before or during mandatory minicamp, which is in the middle of June. I think that they want to get this deal done, wrapped up, before they come back for training camp. Stacey, you bet me that the deal would get done somewhere around August 2nd, and we'll see how that pans out. But I have to imagine that the Seahawks are very motivated to go on their vacation, their month-long vacation, knowing that they've got DK Metcalf's contract signed, sealed, delivered, and they don't have to worry about a hold-in potentially for him and missing some practices that are vital for him to participate in right from the get-go.
I'm not entirely sure, but I want to say Bobby Wagner's last extension, either 2015 or 19, was on August 2nd. I remember because it was very early that the news broke, and I
yes.
had to wake up and write about it,
it
on
was.
A Saturday.
It absolutely was.
Second down. How does the signing of cornerback James Bradbury affect the dynamic in the NFC East? And, importantly, why should Seahawks fans care?
Well, I think that James Bradbury is a very good football player. And honestly, I was surprised that there weren't more teams that were vying for his services because he is an above-average corner. I mean, at his best, he's a top corner in this league. And so he is paired with Darius Slay, which gives them a great chance to really compete at a high level in the NFC East. Now, why should Seahawks fans care? Well, I mean, you want to be able to see a secondary, a cornerback group that is reminiscent of what the Eagles have now been able to put together. You're looking at a group right now, Stacey, this was one of your position groups that you were, quote unquote, you know, panicking about and worried about a little bit yesterday when we were talking about this, in terms of having guys that are completely unproven. And right now, the Eagles not only have two proven players and veterans, but very, very good football players that can be difference makers, and how that can help your defense out in terms of creating turnovers and helping everybody else's job be easier is tremendous. So hopefully here in Seattle, we see these young guys that are being given these opportunities really step up and take ownership of it.
Third down. What change to the Seahawks defense are you most excited to watch this season? You can only choose one.
There's a lot of them, to be honest with you. There's a lot of different ways I could go with this, but I think at its core fundamental principle, the thing that they have struggled with the most over the past couple of years is something that I think is going to be very much addressed this offseason. Let's listen to Clint Hurt, defensive coordinator, cut number three.
You have two different principles when you play zone coverage in this league. Some teams are spot drops where you really focus on hitting landmarks, and you know, and you, once you get to your depth, you got your vision on the quarterback and you're melting and moving off the eyes of the quarterback and reading his shoulders and whatnot, where he's going with the football. And then you got to break and react on the ball. You know, and the other side you can play is more of a zone matchup principle where you're really playing bodies and pattern matching more so than playing in an area. So are you playing a man or are you playing an area? There's a difference. So you have either zone match or you have spot drop, vision and break. We've been a vision and break defense here for a really long time. And we'll have some of those principles in certain calls that'll stay alive. But the big thing right now is obviously the ability to pattern match, and you got to be able to react to the stems of receivers and whatnot and match up with people.
Vision and break versus pattern match, Jake, explain all of this, please.
Well, vision and break means that you are dropping to a certain depth in a certain area of the zone coverage that you're responsible for, getting your eyes to the quarterback and what's in front of you, and then reacting based off of that. So it's very reactionary. Whereas when you're talking about match coverage, it's more of you dictating the terms of how it's going to go. Meaning that in your zone principles, you're looking more, instead of dropping to a certain spot, you are dropping looking for a particular receiver. Okay, you are running to the number two or number three receiver that is in the formation, and that is your responsibility. So then you play more man to man in that zone. It's more aggressive in nature, and it shrinks down windows because of that. So I really am glad that they're switching to that style rather than, you know, your typical, you know, drop to a certain spot, have your eyes to the quarterback, because it's easy to be manipulated with these great quarterbacks today into, you know, biting the short stuff or giving up easy checkdowns in front of you. It takes away the nature of Stacey just bleeding yards, right? That you're just going to allow offenses to just gain yards after yards after yards, and be able to march up and down the field and control the time of possession. This defense is going to challenge an offense each and every single drive to not only earn it down the field, but you got to earn it to get your first conversion. You got to earn it to get your first down of every single drive. And to me, that's a big difference in terms of the mentality that this defense will have moving forward.
Fourth down. Back to the quarterbacks for this one. This question, courtesy a listener this afternoon. Are we sleeping on Jacob Eason in this quarterback battle?
I think that Jacob Eason is incredibly talented, somebody that I've had a chance to get to know and work with for a number of years, and I think that he has the skill set to be a starter in this league. I just, based off of the way that, you know, they are talking about this quarterback battle and, you know, trading for Drew Lock and, you know, the desire to really add Geno Smith into this competition, that's where you see the conversation being heavily surrounded about Drew Lock and Geno Smith. I believe that the organization is 100% zeroed in and focused on those two guys. However, that does not mean that Jacob Eason is completely shut out of this quarterback battle, and Jacob Eason is going to have to show this organization that he can insert himself into the competition, meaning the way that he approaches to meetings every single day, the execution that he has in practice, and ultimately how he does in scrimmages and in the preseason. If he goes out there and balls out in the preseason, he will be given more opportunities. So it's really going to be, you know, Jacob Eason, you know, taking advantage of the opportunities, however many he gets, to, you know, be like, hey guys, don't forget about me here. Don't forget about me. I've got all the talent in the world to, you know, add to this competition as well. So that's the way that I view it. I think that Jacob Eason is looking up in this competition, but certainly doesn't mean he's out of it.
All right, it's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. I've got today's lineup for the series finale between the Mariners and Blue Jays, including one interesting note there. Plus, why yesterday's second inning felt like the story of the Mariners season, but can it change? That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, got a lineup update, and then we're going to get to some Scott Service sound from yesterday that I think is very important when it comes to the Mariners season. We'll start with the series finale in Toronto. Your lineup today, Adam Frazier leading off, but wait, Adam Frazier leading off as a right fielder. Following that, you got Ty France, Crawford, Winker, Suarez, Rodriguez, Toro at second base, Ford your DH today. Cal Raleigh and Marco Gonzalez gets the start. Two things. Number one, Adam Frazier batting leadoff, playing in right field. Julio batting sixth. Should he be much earlier in the lineup than that?
I've kind of gone back and forth with this, honestly, and I lean towards, yeah, he needs to be earlier than this. He's one of your best hitters. He's one of your best hitters, and I get the idea that, you know, Julio being in the bottom tier of your lineup gives the illusion of more depth, getting somebody on base. But the problem is that you get Julio on base,
and
right?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
It's like,
and then
you got
Toro, Ford, Raleigh.
Hey, Julio's on base. He gets the first. He steals second. We got runners in scoring position. And that's Mike Ford and Steven Souza Jr. and Cal Raleigh, who aren't really hitting.
No offense to those guys, but they're hitting right now.
You know, and so you want traffic on base for your best hitters. And, you know, I mean, it's almost getting to the point where, you know, you wonder. And Ty France has been at the two spot, and I think in a normal situation, I love him at the two spot. Right? Don't get me wrong, but it's almost like I almost would rather have him get pushed back to the third spot and let Julio be in the second spot right at this point. You know, you need guys that are going to get on base, and then you need guys that are going to be able to drive in the runs. And Julio has proven that he is a high on-base guy. So, you know, I would like to see him on base with the opportunity for somebody like Ty France or Eugenio Suarez or somebody of that nature that is going to be able to have an opportunity to drive in multiple runs at the swing of the bat. I mean, we talked about this with Gary Hill Jr., and I asked him the simple question. Do you want the team to be better with runners in scoring position, or do you want more home runs? And Gary said, home runs.
Right.
It's easier to win games right now hitting home runs than it is with runners in scoring position because it's so hard to hit in the league right now. And I get what he's saying. But if you're going to hit a home run, you got to have it count. And that means you got to have people on base. And there's been multiple times so far where Suarez has hit his home runs and it's been a solo home run. You want him to have that impact where that home run that he does hit, man, it's a big bang for your buck type of situation.
Yeah, I felt like seeing Crawford later in the lineup was okay with me because I was like, well, it breaks up that kind of big black hole in the bottom half of the lineup.
And right.
It allows someone to drive in runs should there be any, you know, runners in scoring position. He can still get on base. He's batting third today, which I obviously don't mind, but I would even like to see that flipped with Rodriguez in third or cleanup.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe I'm overestimating how quickly Rodriguez is adjusting to the league and and the staff would like to be a little experimental and see kind of where what the best mix is, given that we're only a month in.
But. It's true, and I think Adam Frazier has done a good job at the top of the lineup. You know, he's very hot and cold. It's hard because obviously we're talking about lineup changes and just trying to do anything to help spark this offense. And Scott Service is sitting there thinking the same thing. But you know, at some point, you do need to be able to solidify, you know, your lineup and be able to have guys, you know, prepare and know the spots that they're going to be hitting in. But I certainly would like Julio to be hitting higher than what he is at the six spot right now. It's just there's nothing that's producing runs or driving in runs when he gets on base. And to me, that's a waste of an opportunity.
All right, so that is your lineup today. Pregame show starts at 3 p.m. First pitch is at 4:07. Again, Marco Gonzalez getting the start. I want to get to some sound from yesterday. Scott Service, after this game, pointed to the second inning in particular. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, we got to change the record, don't we? It's the same old song. Outstanding outing by Logan tonight. He was great, really. Ran into trouble there a little bit in the second. Thought he was going to work his way through it. You know, it was kind of the story of the game was the second inning. We hit into a double play, and they found a hole and you know, got their runs in. But outstanding pitch game on both sides. Again, Logan was outstanding.
Service saying the story of the game was the second inning. He's not wrong from multiple perspectives. Not just was it the only inning in which runs were scored, that for Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Neither team did much else following that. But it's also the story of the game in that the Mariners had opportunities they didn't capitalize on because of a struggling offense with great pitching, though. And the Blue Jays had slim opportunities they did capitalize on that bases clearing triple by George Springer being that one moment. I think, though, that it's fair to say this is the story of the season so far.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily like, oh, the best pitching ever with no offense, although that is becoming a concerning trend, particularly in the last two games at least. But,
yeah.
But rather that this is a team that has just too many holes in the lineup. And it's not fair to point the finger solely at someone like Jerry Dipoto and say, do more. Be better, right?
Yeah.
However, there are a lot of fingers to be pointed at multiple different issues, some of which are in your control. Now, the ones that aren't are things like Mitch Haniger being out. Mitch Haniger's hurt. Kyle Lewis, you didn't see another knee surgery for him where he'd be down in AAA right now. You had Tom Murphy even, who had been pretty solid for you to start the year. He's also hurt, right? So health is something you can't really predict, and it's not really fair to pin that on a team's lack of offseason moves. Another thing that's like kind of in their control but not really is when free agents just say, no thanks. No thank you. No amount of money you offer me is going to make me want to go to Seattle. I don't know what to tell you. Can I really be mad at an organization if that's the case? I mean, I can be mad at an organization from like a macro point of view of like, well, why doesn't this guy want to come to Seattle? Because you haven't made the playoffs for 20 years. Like, it'd be
correct.
A lot easier to convince someone to put up with those travel miles if you were a historically great franchise. It's still hard to pin that entirely. What I will do, though, is say, you know what? You pinned a lot on your young prospects.
Uh-huh.
And the reason that Steven Souza, who was a big part of that bad second inning, is even in that lineup is because one of those young prospects isn't working out right now.
It's very true. And that is one of the other parts that's really difficult about this is that they were hoping that Jared Kelnick was going to take that next step, right? And it's just taken longer for him to get this thing going. And it is a bummer to see, especially after the last month of the season that he had. But I just think that overall, when you put yourself in that situation and you're so reliant on your young players to come through and produce, you're setting yourself up for failure, right? And that's the difficult part about this situation. And just one injury from Mitch Haniger, you're one injury away from really putting your depth of your lineup in jeopardy, because Mitch Haniger is the only consistent bat that has the ability to drive in RBIs, to hit home runs, and do that night in and night out. And they're greatly missing that production from Mitch Haniger. I think that this group would be significantly better in terms of their record if Mitch Haniger was out there. They're missing that bat so badly. And it's unfortunate that, you know, guys like Winker or Suarez have not been able to pick up the slack in Mitch Haniger's absence. That, to me, has been the big storyline of you know, this situation. It doesn't mean it can't change, but they got to do it soon.
Certainly doesn't mean they can't change. I mean, they were always going to be kind of on the cusp, even if they had guys overperforming and outperforming expectations. It's just hard to compete with the top-tier markets, the top-tier teams. It is. You have enough pieces where I do genuinely think the numbers aren't reflecting the possibility and the talent they have on the roster. Hopefully that changes as we head into June, especially. The May schedule is really tough. And what did we learn today in our interview with Paul Sewald? He said, look, I promise you no one in this clubhouse is panicking right now. It's early. It's not the start we wanted, clearly. But we feel pretty good about this season still. So if there is one thing we learned today, and one thing you want to take from it, maybe it's that interview with Paul. We'll see how the season evolves. Certainly, we'll see how this series wraps up.
That's why
today.
They're playing, and we get to talk about
That's
it.
Exactly right. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Wrapping things up with This or That. That's next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, it is This or That from All Red Heating Cooling. We have been kind of bouncing back and forth between This or That, what I need to know, going This or That today. And this is how we're going to wrap up Jake and Stacey while we send you to Wyman and Bob. And then an hour from then to the pregame show. So let's get started here. Based on our theme from earlier today, this or that when it comes to an unwelcome surprise find in your home, snakes or spiders? I want you to think, though, giant poisonous spiders, not just like a little house spider. Okay. Like I'm talking like a black widow spider.
All right. Great. Thanks for upping the ante.
I would just let
like,
well, I'm not just going to say bugs. People are going to be like snakes. Obviously.
I would take spiders still because it's easier to dispose of them than a snake. Think about it. It's a lot harder to get rid of a snake.
Move faster too.
Well, don't sleep on those spiders.
I don't know that I could. I could outrun a spider. I could probably outrun a snake. But
yeah,
I don't know
when
if I
you
could
kill a spider.
I don't
yeah,
know if
when
I could move out of the way.
Yeah, but when you're trying to kill a spider, I mean those things are fast. I mean we're talking quick agility here. So it's not as easy. But I would definitely pick spiders. I don't want to bend down and pick up a snake to get it out of there. No, thank you.
And here's the thing. If I ever found a snake in my toilet, I could never go in there again. Yeah, I would never use that bathroom again.
It would be over.
It would just
finito.
Done.
Yep.
This or that. This is a hypothetical trade. Would you rather have George Kirby, Jared Kelnick, and Noel V. Marte or Juan Soto? For the record, I would like to say I would think it would take more than that to get Juan Soto. I think they'd ask for Julio, and you'd need to give up more than just those three if you weren't going to part with Julio. But the question, all these prospects for the future, or Juan Soto?
Sell the entire farm. I do not care. Get Juan Soto. Get Juan Soto, pair him with Julio Rodriguez in the outfield, and go from there. I mean, sign me up for that all day, every day. I'm sorry. I love some of these names and obviously, you know, very, very high upside and everything, but give me a proven commodity. Get me a young superstar paired with another young superstar. Yeah, I would feel very, very good about that.
What do you think?
Is it, though? Is it?
Come on, Mike. You're assuming you're going to get the Nationals version of Juan Soto.
Yes, you are.
I don't know. I think that's a lot to give up, and George Kirby's going to be top of the line, number one or number two starter soon.
So you think
Noel V. Marte, you could have your third baseman in a couple of years there.
Potentially.
You don't know if Juan Soto's best years are behind him. What's he going to do?
20,
can one guy,
what is he, 22, 23?
Fix the entirety of the Mariners' offensive problems?
Yes.
No, I think he's a little older than that. Is he 24?
Oh, I don't know if one guy can fix the entirety of the Mariners' offensive problems. He's 23.
23.
Yeah, he's got some years left.
Yeah, and I don't think this is an NLAL problem here. But
My vote would be, they can't afford him.
True.
They can't afford to pay him, so keep what you have.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a bigger issue there. Mike, I hear your point. I see your point.
But I don't respect your point.
He doesn't respectfully disagree.
He just thinks
it's dumb.
I would say... Thank you for your input. I'm making the trade.
Jake, this or that.
Don't worry, I won't be here anymore.
Waiting in line or waiting in traffic? Now, this is a rare instance where waiting in traffic is better. Air conditioning, music, podcast, you're sitting down, you're by yourself. Waiting in line?
Where are you in line?
you're like a DMV in line, but you have to see.
There's a big difference.
See, I honestly think the worst places to wait in line are the DMV and when you're trying to get something done with your phone. Right? You're in a service provider, and it takes forever.
But you know what's
for them
weird?
To get to you.
You go to
because
places,
there's nothing to do in there. You walk around, you go see the same phones that you've seen, you know, a million times.
Here's what I don't get.
What are you supposed to do? There's no chairs in there. What these people are monsters.
Here's what I don't get. When you go to a place where you've been waiting in line forever or consistently wait in line, but your order never takes that long. And you're always like, why? There's this coffee place by my parents' house that I used to love going through, but I could never go if I was in a hurry because I'm not kidding. You will wait in that line at that coffee place for 20 minutes, and I'm talking there's like three cars ahead of you. It makes no sense. Every time I've gone up there, it takes like 3 minutes to get my order. I'm always like, are you just like hanging out with people and like what's going on here? That's like the phone thing. You're like, what's
great
going
question.
On?
Exactly. It's a great question. I would say
great question.
No,
I knew I'd get it. I knew I'd get it by the end of the day.
Dang it.
This or that beach vacation, ski vacation.
Well, we've lost Jake for the rest of the segment, so I'll go with this. Despite having to worry about quicksand, I'll take the beach vacation.
I will take the beach vacation 10 times out of 10. Jake, what about you?
Beach vacation. Okay. Move on.
Okay.
Move on.
This or that. Now, this one's from a listener. I think the answer's obvious. You can have new socks every single day for the rest of your life, or a magic water bottle that automatically fills itself with fresh filtered water. The answer is water bottle.
No.
Yes, it is.
How lazy are you? We can fill up our water bottle.
A water bottle that... How many times have you been somewhere and you've been dying of thirst?
Not a lot.
Usually, I'm pretty prepared.
I just have never thought to myself, I wish I had new socks today.
My socks wear out all the time.
Yeah, same. Maybe
athletic
this is,
socks get
maybe
out
this
all
is,
the time.
Maybe this is a male-female thing. I don't know.
I have never once thought, like, you know, the most annoying part
exciting.
Of my day?
I would love that present.
Putting on new socks every day?
Well, it
not
is.
Not having enough new socks?
It is a great feeling. Have you ever put on new socks?
Have I ever put on new socks?
Yeah, I'm just asking
I put on socks.
Because
just
it's
never,
quite...
Have you ever had your favorite pair
it's quite
tear
the rush.
On you?
No.
See, you never get a hole in the bottom of your favorite sock?
No, what?
What?
You guys...
Never?
What are your toenail situations
No, the
like?
Bottom, the heel.
The bottom.
Oh, no.
What?
You guys are wearing your socks that much? Well, a heel. So a hole in your sock just from your...
We
sock.
Are Stacey,
this
men
is,
of means.
That's right. This is talking about being land athletes versus...
swimming.
Swimming, right? You just don't know the pain.
Versus donut athletes.
You just don't know the pain, Stacey, of what that's like to have your favorite pair of socks when you're playing basketball or whatever and they wear out. It's the worst. Absolute worst.
The texter who sent that in said, shout out to the boys. Socks all day.
Socks all day.
Whatever, man. Whatever. This or that. Star Wars or Lord of the Rings. Last question. I was going to say Star Trek, but let's be real. Sorry, Trekkies.
No one chooses Star Trek.
Yeah. Amen. This isn't even close to me. This is Star Wars. Star Wars all the way over Lord of the Rings.
Star Wars also. I second. Lefko.
Yeah, I'd go Star Wars because they've done so much with it. They've expanded the franchise. You have the Mandalorian. You have all the backstories there. It's good. It's fun.
Yes,
also, like,
it is.
Is it just me or the one-off movies of Star Wars? Some of the better ones. You've got the original. Fantastic. But, like, I feel like Rogue One, great. The Han Solo spinoff, actually pretty great. I thought it was underrated. Like, all of those ones are the best.
I mean, they're pretty good. I mean, I have not seen a Star Wars movie that I haven't enjoyed. And again, I know that there are Star Wars fans that are like really did not like the last couple movies. And
I didn't mind them.
But, like, I'm there to have a good time and to get entertained. I'm not there for the, like, the super hardcore details of everything.
I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Yeah.
When it comes to Star Wars.
And so, was it entertaining? Is there a few twists in there? You know, that's all I care about.
Right.
And I think Star Wars has delivered on that. Lord of the Rings is good too, but that's a whole nother.
Oh,
that's a whole nother.
From the
genre.
253, a 1-star review for Lord of the Rings slander. Guys, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. This has been Jake and Stacey on Seattle Sports Station on 710 and
it's
the
a
Seattle
review.
Sports app. Wyman and Bob coming your way next.